So if we could get started, I'd like to call to order. And first thing we're going to do is we're going to approve the agenda. Does anyone have any additions to the agenda as written?
I have none.
Okay. All right. Approval of minutes. You've all had a chance to review the minutes. I have two changes that I'd like to put on there. One is I would like Louisa and Molly to have I think we should have doctor in front of their name, okay? Because both are veterinarians, right? Yeah. So if there is no objection to that, that would be my addition to the minutes, and I think it should be changed for who's present, okay? Any other addition or corrections to the minutes? Okay, so I need an approval those changed. Okay, second?
Second.
Okay, all those in favor of approving the minutes as changed, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed? Very good. Okay, now, public forum. This is a time for members of the public to offer comments concerning matters not scheduled to be heard before the Board of Health. Anyone? No one. Okay, very good. Okay. So this is consent agenda. All items listed under the consent agenda will be enacted by one motion. No separate discussion of these items unless a request is made prior to the time the board votes on the motion. So the two things we have to consent, one is consideration of personal actions to pay adjustment for Margaret Janes to $3,349. BW, what does that mean?
Biweekly.
Okay. And the other one is a consideration of the signed agreement between Story County Board of Health and Mary Greeley Medical Center Home Health Services, which I reviewed and actually looks like I've already signed it. So, okay. All right. So we need to have a approve those two things.
So moved.
Okay. Second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay. Thank you very much. Story County Public Health. Less than Teresa. No, Les is staying back. Okay.
I am Teresa with Story County Public Health. So a few things here. Our diseases have started to pick up, which we kind of thought would happen in the summer. We've had several E. coli's and Cyclospora cases. We do have a young girl, and I want to ask you, Dr. Passion. So she's 2 years old.
Can you bring a microphone closer to you?
Oh, sorry. This young girl is 2 years old, and it was right, I've been gone this past week, but right prior to me leaving, like maybe the 25th or so, she was E. coli positive. When I got a report from Sherry this morning, she's continued to test positive, so then they have to keep her out of the daycare. And according to the state, our understanding is they have to be out of the daycare until they get two negative stools. Sherry just wanted me to see what your opinion is on that.
That's what it says. I really did not, when that was first run across, apparently it says that in the Centers for Disease Control Red Book.
Right.
So it sounds reasonable. The stools are just basically easy to collect, and
it's just
and it's enterotoxigenic. Is that right, or is it E. coli?
H157? E. coli.
Yeah, which one?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah, there are two different types. One is more prone to develop hemolytic uremic syndrome than the other one. And I think it's the one that's more prone to develop hemolytic uremic syndrome. But if you can give me the name, I'll double check it when I get back
to
the office.
Of the type of E. coli? The name of the type of E. coli is? Okay.
Right, because they were seen by one of our patients. I mean, one of our doctors.
Yeah. And so the doctor's evidently telling the mom that the baby should be good to go back.
I'd have to look and see exactly what type it is.
Yeah.
So if you could share the name of the, I think it should be okay, and then I'll let you know.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. and then we're still waiting on the service agreement for the reminder recall program that we've been talking about. I had to give the report or give the service agreement to our legal team.
Okay.
And I haven't really heard anything from them yet.
Okay.
So I'm waiting. I might contact them later if I don't. But So I'm waiting on that.
Hope our ex officio member has just kind of strolled in.
Okay.
Well, you're still it, aren't you? Still
I'm,
it?
I'm the alternate.
Alternate.
Well, there you go. Lisa Heddens is not here.
Correct. Do you want me up there? Because I can sit out here.
No. Get up here. I want you up there. Oh, now we're getting the apologies.
Put it in the minutes.
We'll just
put it in the minutes. Yeah.
Put it in the minutes. I got it ready.
205.
All right, now everyone's present. Now we can start.
Go ahead. Okay. And then just, as you've probably heard, the flu vaccine is going to be delayed this year, like a month, is kind of what I've been told.
The what?
The flu vaccine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, about
because
a month.
Because of the trying to find the right strain or something. And, yeah. And then...
that might not be necessarily bad, because there is always this question of how early to give the flu vaccine.
Right.
And we tend to give it as soon as we get it, which is usually about mid-August.
Mm-hmm.
They tell us now we're not going to get it till the first part of September.
Mm-hmm.
And but in reality, it probably would be better that we don't start giving it till towards the end of September.
Right, so it doesn't kind of start to wear off.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So.
Right. And the whole reason is because they're trying to make it more definitive on the strain. So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But and
I don't think that's necessarily bad, because I've not heard of any shortages.
No, I haven't either.
Not anticipate any shortages.
No, in fact, the note we got from the Santa Fe said that we should be able to still get all that we had ordered.
Good.
So, yeah. And then we had some money left over at 1B Coalition that we do for our emergency management stuff. So with that money, we purchased Stop the Bleed kits for all the high schools. And Sherry delivered like half of them when I was gone. And then so we've got three other high schools to get to. But they were so grateful for those. So they're like big kits that hang on the wall. And they have like 8 Stop the Bleed kits in them, in this big glass case that hangs on the wall. So that's what we did with our money that we had left over from our emergency stuff. So now they all are stocked well with Stop the Bleed kits.
Okay.
But, all right, that's really all I had.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And our report from YSS.
Okay, we'll let you go.
I brought reinforcements this time.
That Lisa gets all of this when she gets back.
Yeah. Did I give you enough copies for that then? For
yes.
Lisa?
Yeah, that's good.
And Molly?
Oops.
I've got more. Right there. Okay. So, Denise Denton and?
Ryan Doyle.
Okay. So, a couple things. One, we're wrapping up the summer programs. I think we talked about this in June. We had summer enrichment programs in Ames, Nevada, and Collins. And we figure the headcount at last headcount was a little over 500 kids who participated in all of those programs. And they're just wrapping up. We have Kids Club is still going on. But from the looks of the staff, it was either successful or exhausting, possibly both. Those guys are going to need a vacation. But it went really well. Ryan helped with it, various things. So now we're getting ready to go back to school because it's August. I don't know how that happened. In the meantime, we have some good news and some bad news headlines, and I don't have that in that, but there was a headline that came out the other day saying that opioid overdoses are down. That's the good news. The bad news is, the good news is fatalities are down. Overdoses aren't necessarily, but the good news is the Narcan that's being distributed has played a part in ensuring that those overdoses are not necessarily fatalities every time. I wasn't at the last opioid task force meeting, so I don't have the most recent numbers on what the overdoses are in Story County at this point, but I will have for the next time. In the meantime, I wanted to just take a moment today to talk a little bit about interplay and basically talk about how, you know, a drug is one thing. Every drug has a job that it does, and it has a specific job, but it's sort of like who is doing the job? So there's always a lot of details that go with that, like who is doing the drug? How are they ingesting the drug? That makes a big difference. If you smoke a drug, it gets in your brain in about 6 seconds. If you inject it, 6.5, 7, sort of a shoulder shrug. If you snort something, it takes longer again, and you don't get quite as big a bump. If you eat something, it takes a little bit longer, but it often lasts longer, and it sometimes has an even more intense sort of response to that. Or to that. So when they take it, how much, who's taking it, if you're young, if you're old, if you've eaten, if you've not, and any other drugs that you happen to take with it. So the articles that I've given you are sort of a sampling of what that looks like. The first one up is an article from the Iowa Department of Public Health that talks about alcohol in Iowa right now. And just to keep, you know, opioids get a lot of airtime, but alcohol is still our main drug of abuse. And it certainly is the drug of choice among college students. When you mix that with tobacco, you have a whole different drug. But when tobacco and alcohol are used together, you get a different reaction again. And that's why about 85% of alcoholics also smoke. You see that a lot. But when you, this speaks to the policy kinds of things that you guys do, when you reduce access to one, you can reduce access to another. So even though the drugs themselves sort of play well together, not to anyone's advantage, when you look at them together in terms of policy, you can reduce access and you can reduce use. So that is something to consider when we're looking at policy kinds of issues. You guys have a tremendous opportunity to influence those kinds of things. So it's sort of like you can't control anybody else's behavior, but when you change your own, something else has to give. So that's an example of that. There's another article in there that speaks to the interplay that we're seeing with marijuana and vaping. There was just a piece in the news the other night about how MedPharm, which I think is in Sioux City, is all excited about the fact that they now offer vaping pens to ingest the CBD with the THC, but you have a couple articles that speak to the fact that when you vape THC, you get a much different kind of reaction. So those people who are ingesting CBD with THC now have more THC in their system. The more THC, the more likely you are to be psychotic, the more likely you are to get those kinds of reactions. So they're not getting the same drug. The way you ingest it makes it a very different drug. Okay, and that's, you know, so policy by the state legislature makes a difference as to what kind of reaction we're going to see with people who are using that. There's also a couple others that speak to the fact that people they think that smoking in general is dangerous, so they're more likely to vape marijuana, or they're, in the case of Colorado kids, more likely to eat it. So you also have an article that speaks to the fact that the news has been that in states where there is legal marijuana, use among young people has gone down. But in fact, smoking has gone down. Use has not necessarily gone down. They're using it differently. They're using more edibles. Also, the survey that they did in Colorado that everybody quotes did not include the two largest high schools in Denver at the time. So that may skew a little bit of that. We will never know. There's also an article in there that speaks to the fact that they're finding that medical marijuana does not necessarily reduce opioid overdoses. So using that for pain doesn't necessarily mean that people are using less opioids. So I just think it's interesting to look at the interplay that those drugs have and how they are used and who is using them and when they're using them, because the devil is always in the details. To that end, Ryan has been looking at the IOU survey, and that's really our bigger headline. The information from the IOU survey, which is done every other year in Iowa and done in every school we can get into. But again, in Story County, Gilbert and Ballard do not do it. So the information we have is valid to, you know, the schools that take it, but it's not showing us a complete snapshot of the entire county. But Ryan's been has taken it upon himself to study this, and then he arrives at meetings going, but did you know? So I'm going to let him give you a couple did you knows about the young people in Story County regarding alcohol, marijuana, and vaping, I think.
Yes. Hi there. As Denise said, this has kind of been become my pet project of looking into the Iowa Youth Survey. Luckily enough for us, the state of Iowa also breaks it down by county. So they do an average of all the different students, and then they have a statewide report. But at least for us on a local prevention level, the Story County one is much more useful. It's pulled from just over 70,000 validated responses throughout the whole state, and out of those validated responses, which are checked for inaccuracies or intentional falsehoods on the study, they pulled 1,617 responses just from Story County youth from all the various schools, with the exception of Gilbert and Ballard. So that's with the figures on the charts I provided. Those are all specifically Story County youth, 6th, 8th, and 11th grade. Starting with e-cigarettes, which is kind of the headline, in 2016, we had a pretty low amount of e-cigarette usage within the last 30 days, which is what this chart is depicting. The percentage of 6th, 8th, and 11th graders, as well as an average overall total, who have used a cigarette within the last 30 days. In 2016, there wasn't much in the point where you have some grades not using it at all. We've seen quite a historic jump, especially among 11th grade males and females, where we had somewhere in the vicinity of 11% for 11th grade males, right about 5% 11th grade females in 2016. It actually jumped up even more for 11th grade females in 2018, with them topping at about 25%, so a very large jump. And then obviously the total overall on the far right, it shows a jump, but when you break it down by demographics, you can really see the spike. So I really don't think the total overall really does it justice looking at the different disparities between the groups. After that, below that, marijuana use, which has combined good news and bad news. Again, if you look at the total overall, it doesn't really show any difference between the 2 years. But if you look at it broken down by demographics, you can see 11th grade males, luckily we're seeing a decrease there. 11th grade females, though, almost as much of an increase as we saw a decrease with the 11th grade males. Causality is different. You know, I'm not here to posit anything on that, but I can just say that this is what we're seeing. So it really helps us at least look at what we need to look at for education. On the reverse, for alcohol use, we have the percentage that drank alcohol in the last 30 days. That's finally some good news just across just about every one of the demographics we're seeing. A decrease, slight increase with 8th grade female, but other than that, everyone else decrease in alcohol use, which is positive news. We'd like to have some of that. On a similar note below that, tobacco use is a little tougher because this is a different type of chart. This is tracking ever having used tobacco. The reason that it's broken up that way is because the way that the Iowa Youth Survey breaks down tobacco, they do it by cigars, smokeless, and cigarettes. They don't unify them under one having used all tobacco products in the last 30 days, so it's tough to see because it's minor percentages with each of those different ones. But ever having used tobacco is something we can at least track, and that shows us a little better. Again, there, same. It's a bit of a mixed bag. 11th grade males, we see a sharp decrease, which is positive, but then again another increase with 11th grade females. But I like these charts because if you look at the individual demographics, it gives you a better idea what's going on. The total overalls on the right, if you were only looking at that, really doesn't give you a very nuanced look at what's actually going on with the youth. So
you say this does not include Gilbert and Ballard, is that right?
No, they choose not to participate in the Iowa Youth Survey.
So what would be your best guess if they were included in this? How much different would it be?
I mean, without having direct reports from the school, I haven't heard of any, and I do go into some of those schools, specifically Ballard. I participate with their teen club, so I do talk to some of the health teachers. I haven't heard of anything that would lead me to believe that they have anything going on there that would be out of the norm for Story County. So I don't know that they would be different than the 1,600, just over 1,600 responses that were used to compile this. But it does limit some of our accuracy not having those school districts featured in there.
Why aren't they a part of the Iowa Youth Survey?
That is
Have they given you a reason?
They have not. They don't respond. Have to respond to us. We're not the ones that request their participation. The Iowa Department of Public Health is the one that offers and requests.
But.
We certainly do. But as for reasoning, they have not. Or at least if they have, we haven't been made aware of any reason they've given for not participating in it.
There are many, many, many questions, and so it's time consuming. And that may be, or maybe that's not the reason at all, but I know other schools that I've talked to, it's a lot of work.
Okay.
So, but it gives us a lot of valuable information. It's good to be able to see trends to know where the potholes are.
I have a question about the marijuana use, and it just says marijuana use in the last 30 days, and so far is the assumption pretty much that it's going to be smoked, either in a bowl or a cigarette, that it's the leaf form of that?
They don't differentiate.
The question itself doesn't differentiate. Unlike with ever having used tobacco, which specifically excludes and actually has in the question, this does not include using an electronic cigarette. The marijuana use doesn't. It just says, have you ever used marijuana? It doesn't specify. There's just to what Denise was saying, there are 212 questions on the in total. So there are a lot of questions and dimensions they look at. We focus on ATOD, alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs. But no, at least for marijuana, they don't have a specifier on there as the method they use.
Every year it gets tweaked a little, so, maybe in the future they'll ask if you ever vaped it sort of thing, because that really seems to be the thing that is up and coming.
Well, what's been on my mind has been since Illinois is changing its law, and so I'm just wondering about availability of use. It's not that far of a drive on the interstate to get over the bridge, over the Mississippi River anymore, so I'm just going to...
And availability, perception of, we've talked about this before, perception of harm is huge, but availability, access is not nothing. So to that end, the very last one, last page that you're looking at, it says innovative community prevention matrix. But in 1987, myself and 87 other people in the room created this, what we call the community prevention matrix. Because the question, it was always the prevention's so nebulous. What is it? What do you do? How do you do it? And so we really did have a discussion at a conference about how do you make it a clear roadmap for where what needs to happen and where it needs to happen to, sort of thing. So this is really based on the public health model, which is the who, what, and where. It's like, what is happening, who's it happening to, and where is that? So that's what the CDC uses for everything. Whether it's Ebola or measles or violence, it's like, what is happening, who's it happening to, and what is the area? Where do you put the yellow tape around to try and contain it? So this basically is at least two-thirds of that. So the question is, what kinds of strategies can you use that make a difference? And so with the Institute of Medicine, they have sort of a continuum that follows this, where you look at primary prevention, or sometimes you call it universal prevention, and that is prevention services that everybody is your customer, okay? It's information, education, alternatives. When you're saying no to something, what can you say yes to instead? Social policy and community-based process, which is like the town hall meetings that we have and community conversation. How do you get people into the room? Then problem identification and assessment, that's your secondary stuff, that's your selected, who's really having problems with this. And then aftercare and treatment, or treatment actually, aftercare, are more your indicated, or sometimes we call them tertiary. It's like, okay, if somebody has a problem, how do we keep them from going back into relapse? So all of these are valid. All of these are actually prevention services, but some of them you hope you have the larger audience. In other words, you're trying to get them young and raise them right to begin with. And that is just more cost effective because you can do it with more people in a shorter amount of time. When you send somebody to treatment, that is way more money and staff intensive. So you try and get it up front. And then who do you give those services to? And as it turns out, you try and give them to everybody in the community. You want families and youth and the business community and the medical community and the justice community to all have this information so everybody's on the same page. But not just information, you want them to have education. In other words, that's a dialogue. So when we did those community conversations with opioids over the last couple of years, that was a chance for people to come back and ask more questions because wisdom and knowledge are cumulative. So that's when we do Project Alert is 13 sessions, because you don't just do a one-time thing and expect them to get it. And we don't teach math just once. We teach it every year. So you can't just do health once. You need to do it across many. And so on and on and on. You want all those people to have it. So this is what Nevada is doing with their task force. We are currently looking at, when we meet, they bring me information about where the services are in Nevada, and we're starting to fill this in. And that tells you where you have your services, because that speaks to your, you know, is this a duplication of services? If we already have something working right here, let's move over. There's plenty of stuff to do. But you do want all of those people to have those messages many times. So that's the planned redundancy of it all. You want to, I used to say this to George Blitzos, I'm not responsible for all of this, but I need to be responsible to know where it is so that we can support those services and interface with them and support them. And so we're looking to make a complete picture of, you know, where the good things are happening and where we need to put our efforts. So we don't need to, you know, reinvent the wheel a few times. Does that make sense? This is the approach always when we're trying to do comprehensive prevention. We don't have enough time to do it wrong several times. A couple times, maybe. We try not to do it several times. So this gives you an idea.
Good, right?
We are.
Sounds good.
Premise, questions, answers.
Well, thank you very much.
Right here.
As always, so interesting. Okay, Story County Environmental Health.
Margaret James with the Environmental Health Department. So I'll try to make this report short because we have a lot on the rest of the agenda. So grants to counties, we finished up. It's on a fiscal year situation. So for the fiscal year, 27 pluggings, one cistern or rehabs, and 162 sampling. Kathy and Matt, especially Kathy's been doing a lot more arsenic testing, which is very important. So grants to counties fiscal year 2019, we spent everything but $700, which is really good because it goes back into the state budget instead of staying with our community. So really good. For 2020, we have been awarded $31,000, so same as last year. And then for this calendar year, there's been 6 drilled wells so far. Septic, quite slow still compared to other years. Let's see, septic permits are way down. No explanation, just maybe an economic picture. I would like to do a little budget summary, it being the end of the fiscal year. So after a full year of spending money, we used 96% of what we budgeted, and we had a remainder of about $12,000. We do not buy furniture at the end of the year like maybe some you hear of people getting busy spending. We do not do that, so $12,000. Our proposed revenue, the proposed revenue was $80,000, and we received only 66% of that, difference of $27,000, and that is because that grant check came in after the fiscal year, so that's one of the main reasons. For 2020, our proposed expenditures is $328,000, a little bit more than our previous year. And then our proposed revenue is down by $9,000. And that is because we lost, on our pumper contract, we lost one pumper to inspect because they moved to a different county. And and the tanning program has been eliminated, so we lost that revenue as well. So we're pretty much done with all of the inspections for that IDPH grant or contract. for pools, tattoo, and tanning. That's one inspection per year, and then follow-ups for violations that were caught. Complaints, we've had a few on apartments, things like that. This is going to be on the back burner for winter, is maybe going and talking to some of the cities about possibly developing a little better rental agreement inspection program or something like that to give the renters a little more of a voice. A lot of times, so City of Ames is the only one that seems to have a program, so a lot of the complaints come to us, and we do the best we can, but it's really not a public health issue. So it would be very beneficial to the renters or the tenants in these communities if the cities, the incorporated cities, would have some kind of a program or at least somebody to try to answer their questions. Loris?
What is the complaint exactly? I mean, is the plumbing backing up? Is that's the type of complaint?
Usually it's mold.
Oh, thank you.
Sometimes it's leaking water. It's seldom septic or backups. Seldom. Mold is the number one, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Heat. Sometimes not enough heat. Whoops. So we issued notices of violations for maintenance contract for peat filter, health nuisance, and Frenald, and that was abated. Corrective action plan for pool violations, that was Matt's, and then there was a guy that needed a little reminder on plugging his well. Conceptual reviews, Carnes, Dakin's Lake Cabin, Roland Clinic, CUP for boarding, and Alathi rezoning for residential to ag. Meetings. The one thing, Premier Tech workshop, I went to that so that I could be a little smarter about it for the Hickory Grove Lake thing. That was a day-long workshop. Miscellany, the irons, big deal came up about the easements around the townhouses because they're putting the septic systems in the easements, the conservation easements, and the utility easements. But so we work with the city, the engineer, Matt, and the owner, and we think we have it figured out what to do. A couple failing mounds that are just a total nightmare that we've been working on. I took Boone's, one of Boone's new sanitarian or specialist with me to do some inspections to train him. Matt's anniversary came up.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Yeah, 2010. This is the longest he stayed at a job is what I've heard. So, really good. Really good. Always smiling. All right. And then time of transfers with the wrong bedroom information, which probably makes no sense, but I'm going to talk about that a little bit more, so I won't go into it here at the time. I wanted to give you an update on what's going on with the Longview Pork, the CAFO construction. So they started with the Richland 10, which is the northmost one of the three. And this is just, you know, it looks so clean and pretty and, you know. So this is what it looks like. And so here you're looking at the slats that the pigs will stand on, and then the manure goes down through, collects in that 8-foot deep pit. It was just interesting to me. I thought I'd share it with you. So that was 10, and then this is section 29,
so,
28.
So, Martin, 28. May I interrupt you?
Yeah.
So they're building these CAFOs. Is there any thought to sampling the water around it, downstream from it?
There is, and that's why we have that watershed assessment
group.
And we're trying to get some that are above and below. The committee, though, does not want to try to point fingers at people, and so we are choosing sites that are representative, but not necessarily. Because I wanted to do that. I thought, oh, we could put one here, and boom, you know. But
You have a baseline, because the people who are putting these up are assuring us that they are good. They're going to keep an eye on things. They're going to keep the water clean. It's a good way to have them prove it.
Yeah. The problem with that is that there's really no stream right near it. So where do you sample? I mean, there's one.
What's underneath those pits?
Yeah.
Just dirt.
Is it just dirt?
Yeah, well, okay, so this is section 28, so they're digging there, and then they'll pour the concrete.
Just the walls, but the floor is not concrete.
Yeah,
is the floor,
yeah.
Concrete
the floor is.
Oh, it's concrete, yeah. Okay.
It's like a bathtub.
It's a concrete kinda tank then.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's like a big septic tank almost when you think about it that way.
So, but the way that water flows in, you know, in our state, you know who's going to be the water supply downstream with the watershed, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we could certainly
just grab some samples.
Get a
now.
Grab sample from the closest point where that would flow to. So that would be West Indian Creek, right?
Right.
Yeah, so we could sample there. Yeah, we could do that.
I hope no one has any objections, but I think this is a great opportunity because it's not someone who's outstanding right now, who's already operating. We have someone who's going to be operating in our county, and these CAFOs are going to be an issue with this county. And it would be a great piece of information to have what the water was like before and what was the water like afterwards. Mm-hmm. Not that we have much choice with the DNR, but at least it will give us information.
Yeah, and actually I have done that for the 29 one at the park.
Yeah.
But I haven't done that for the 10.
But
I have done it for 29.
How do they get rid of the liquid and they pump it out? Then
they pump it out. So
apply it somewhere.
So see these little bump outs here.
Yeah.
That's where they suck it out of. So the truck will come by, you know, and suck it out of there, and then land apply it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a quick question since our civil counsel's sitting right there. You knew I was headed for you when I started looking that way, right? Back to John Zakia. Okay. So where do we have to sample from? Do we need permission from the landowner or to sample?
I suppose I defer to Mark on that question.
Oh, okay.
I'll defer. No. Usually they're far, like the one for 29 I did at the park where, you know, the water flows through there.
Okay.
So I didn't ask the city for permission. It's a city park.
Sure. So if you wanted to be a certain distance away, then we'd have to either get permission from a nearby landowner or that landowner then? For any private property, would we want to?
I'd assume so. I could look into that, but I assume that makes sense.
And then sometimes you can collect a sample from a bridge. That's how we do a lot of them with Iowater.
Uh-huh.
You drop a dipping bucket, rinse it 3 times, and collect your sample that way. So that way you don't have to get permission. I don't think so.
Okay. Thanks.
Because you're not on the land.
Right. Yeah. You're on county property usually.
Yeah. Really.
Yeah. I would think it would be a real good idea to just get some baselines.
Get some baselines, yeah. So the committee was kind of trying to stay away from, because I thought maybe above and below a golf course, for example. But they thought that was a little bit too finger-pointing, that we could not do that.
I don't know. Really, it's like, you know, no one's talking about blame. We're just talking about collecting information. We don't know how well we're doing until we know where we started from. Mm-hmm. You might do a sample downstream and find that it's terribly contaminated. Mm-hmm. And 5 years down the road, it's still contaminated, but it's not any change. So we know that there's probably not a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Maybe you'll sample, it'll be contaminated, and in 5 years something will happen, and it's less contaminated. But I think we don't know how well we're doing until we know where we started from.
Yeah.
So I think the more samples you can get throughout the county, this is just a priority. You're getting it new.
Mm-hmm.
Find out what they're doing.
And as a matter of fact, on Friday, that group is meeting, and we are discussing sampling points.
Well, hopefully, I think it'd be a good idea.
There's quite a few, you know, but you can't sample it all, obviously. But we're working with Ames. Ames is doing a really big part of it also, so that's very helpful.
I mean, maybe if they want to make sure they're not doing that, maybe what you should do is you should grid out the county, take a sample from each grid, and then just your priority is the sample south of these new things going up. That way they can't blame anyone. You can just say, well, we're doing it in each grid.
Random or, yeah, it's just
What's the cost? What would be the most important contaminants you would be looking for?
That's a good question.
Yeah. BOD and E. coli, ammonia are kind of the big ones for CAFOs anyway. Chloride is more of an urban thing.
Nitrate.
Perfect, yep, nitrate. Anything else, you guys?
Okay. What's the cost to do a sample?
It can be pretty high. The city of Ames, that's where they're really helping out. They have an in-house lab, and so they're doing a lot of that for us, for the group. So we haven't quite gotten there yet, so Kathy, nitrate and bacteria, for example, for well water, what is that at now?
$23, $25 for both.
$25 for both, but that doesn't include BOD.
Okay.
So it could be maybe $50 if you did the whole batch.
I was just thinking about John's idea about the grid or whatever, we're not talking hundreds of dollars per sample. We're talking $25 to $50.
Mm-hmm. Adds up.
It would add up, but boy, that's anyways. I can go on and on about my feelings about sampling water and stuff.
Yeah.
But I really think it's a good idea.
On the flip side of that, with the university here, we've done a lot of monitoring, and we already kind of know we got problems. So maybe instead of continuing to monitor, we need to start doing something,
you're right. You're absolutely right about that. But one of the contentions that we keep hearing is that we're doing a great job, that the farmers are working on this, but no one is measuring. And in fact, the measurements that were put in play by the Obama administration have been kind of knocked out for just that reason. So I think we can start doing some things locally. Mm-hmm. And measuring it. Now, if Iowa State has stuff from 5 years ago, great.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine with that. But if they don't, we should collect it.
Okay.
You're kind of going like this, I guess. I'm an ex officio member, so I'm thinking a little out loud here for you guys, if you won't make a request to the group,
we're an advise and consent board, correct?
Correct.
So we can advise.
Correct.
And if it needs more money, it'll have to get consent from the county board of supervisors.
Correct. Right.
Yeah.
So, but making the advice request is certainly within what you do. You are empowered to do to take to that group.
Yes, and so I could take that grid idea to the group.
See what happens.
And then frequency.
I would recommend. My own opinion is I'd recommend you want a baseline right now.
Yeah.
When you get a baseline, then we can talk.
Okay, so baseline.
It would really nice to get a snapshot of what the water is like now. And then.
Are you talking about just these long views? Right now,
it sounds like your committee doesn't want to pick on anybody.
Correct.
They don't want someone coming to you and say, oh, you're picking on us. You're watching us more than anyone. That's why I like the idea of making just a grid throughout the county. Some type of grid, and say you'll get a sample from each grid over time, and you just say, okay, but this is the first one we're going to do, but we're going to get everybody.
Yeah.
And if you have a plan for that, then someone can complain, you're watching us more than anyone else. No, we're not. We just happen to do you first. We're going to be watching everybody.
So a lot of the water quality, too, just one more point, is it's very weather dependent. So if you're in the middle of a storm versus a dry spell, hugely different.
That's an excuse that people always give for these water samples about, that was taken during a dry spell.
Storm event.
It's going to be worse during spring. But if you take it at the same time each year, or if you take it in August of 2019 and you decide to recheck it in August of 2022,
I mean, it's somewhat calendar or seasonal dependent, but it's also weather dependent, you know, what the most recent storm brought.
There always will be people arguing it, you know.
It would not surprise me if, as we begin budget discussions in January, that the Board of Supervisors would be talking about what can the Watershed Implementation Group do to do some implementing, okay? So this seems like an idea that if the Watershed Group clears it, you know, thinks it's good going forward, that that would be an appropriate time now to start the discussion if, in fact, the group would make a decision wanting to put some money into, say, doing a base grid or something like that.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? Do you think that's feasible?
Yeah, you're right. If we're going to do it, let's do it before the hogs arrive.
The hogs move.
But like I said, I did the 28 already. So, well, yeah, we'll get some. We'll figure something out, at least for these three. Yeah.
Do you need a motion from us, or is it just this discussion
enough?
Yeah. Okay. That sounds okay? Okay. Give it a try. All right.
Oh, did you?
Thank you.
Okay.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No, that's fine. And then as an afterthought this afternoon, I asked Scott Henry for pictures of the perimeter drain. So I will share those 2 months from now because I didn't catch them in time. And thank you.
Yes, sir.
Pretty.
Very nice. Okay. All right.
And then
So I think you're next. I think you're on the next agenda items.
All right.
Additional items. Discussion and consideration of professional services agreement to add septic system information to the County Beacons database and website.
Yeah. Okay. So, this is just as kind of a place marker. Septic system sizing is based on soils and number of bedrooms. And then they figure two people per bedroom. So you have a three-bedroom house, it's six people. Okay. That's all fine. The problem that we run into, and it's mostly the time of transfer issue, is that, the inspector will go there, and they will claim that it's a five-bedroom house, and then if you look at the records, the septic is sized for three bedrooms, okay? And so we want it very clear to the buyer that they really shouldn't be packing that house. It's really sized for three bedrooms, okay? It's tough because Story County does not have a building code, so there's no way to really define a bedroom. We've all heard about the egress and the closet, but that's really not on the books for our county. Plus, if I had my sewing room in the basement with an egress and a closet, that's my sewing room. I'm not sleeping there. Is that a bedroom or is that a sewing room? So there's all of these little conflicting things. But we thought that a good start would be to get it out there on Beacon and tell them if we have, you know, how old the septic system is, what type, if it needs a maintenance agreement, or some of the other ones, maintenance agreement, system type, number of bedrooms, obviously, number of bedrooms, that kind of information. And then wells, whether or not there's a geothermal or a water well on that. Now, that is, so to do that, and we've talked to the assessor, and they think it's a fine idea. They have no problem with it. So Matt Boyk got an estimate for me. So $1,000 to do that. It's a one-time cost. This is not a budgeted item. I don't think you really need to vote on it, but I would like you to tell me go ahead with it or don't go ahead with it based on the concept of it. I think that it will help a lot.
So you want to basically use this so that when there's time of transfer, you can easily say to somebody, your house has five bedrooms, but you're only really, you have a septic system for six people.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And because right now, too, a lot of folks say, Beacon says I have five, so I have five. And, you know, maybe they have three sewing rooms and two bedrooms. But, you know, it's just But this way we can say your septic system, and we couldn't give this information over the phone, but there it's just more believable when it's on Beacon, it seems, number one.
You can look it up that way.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
And,
yeah. Oh, that makes
you
sense.
And it's public information.
You might want to buy, and you can look it up without having to go.
Okay, great.
You just go on Beacon
there you
and
go.
Find out all that.
Got it.
Okay,
yeah. That's clear. That's
oh,
clear.
Yes. Yes.
Good. Oh, I like that. Okay.
So I think it's a win. I really
yeah.
do.
Sounds good. Sounds good to you.
Yeah. Okay. We'll go forward with that.
Let's go for
excellent.
It.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, so the next item, oh, I'll let you do your...
Oh, that's right. Let me do something at this meeting.
Okay.
Discussion and consideration of city annexation without providing sewer services. This looks interesting.
Okay, so this is a really lousy picture. Sorry about that. So Mark is excited about this. He's nervous excited. So anyway, we have not received planning and development or environmental health have not received any requests for information on this stuff. So what the plan is, it's Woodland Farms, and if you remember, he's the gentleman that put it in his own mound. He came in to petition. Yeah, so that's that family. And so I'll just start off by saying that, so this is all hearsay, but there's going to be, so they own about 60 acres up here, and they're thinking about 45 lots. And
where is this?
This is okay. So here is Story City, right mm-hmm. here, and then up here is the land that they're wanting to develop. Okay. Now in the green lines, and then the kind of yellow ones over here, those are all city sewer lines. They're all city sewer lines, and green happened to be gravity. I don't think that's important here, but so the question is. And then they've also talked about being annexed by the city. For what reason, I'm not sure. Because, well, there's a couple scenarios. So if they're going to connect to city for city sewer services, they would probably come from this point up to there, and that's about 2,500 feet. And Matt used to work with the city, so he said that's very expensive to run a line that far. Now, Mark, why don't you talk about your comment about infilling and sharing that burden?
Well, all the property owners to the south of there, it would be beneficial. Plus, we'd pick up that, is that an RV park or something there?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some future development there on the right side going north.
Over here.
So, I mean, in Ames, you've got to develop as the city sewer continues, you know, to go out for you. You can't, they don't hopscotch to a piece of property way out ahead and leave these people behind.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be beneficial for all those other property owners to, one, either share in that cost to get it up to, you know, Al's property there at the yellow. And if you're going to be annexed, if you're going to be in the city, that's the city's, that's why people annex, is to get
city services,
which is sewer and water.
Yeah.
Irregardless if you've got to pump it or if you've got to, if it's, you know, if you've got enough fall, you can get there. I don't know if it goes uphill or downhill, but I would think you'd want to pick up some of these other properties. It'd be beneficial for them. And then at that time, if they want to use that, then they'd reimburse, you know, for that 2,500 feet. Because it shouldn't be, you know, all Al's burden to carry that.
Yeah.
He would get reimbursed at some point for that money.
Okay, so utilities then is kind of a mixed bag. It would be Xenia Rural Water would be the water supplier, but now they're worried about fire control water, so that Xenia could not provide them, so that's a problem. And then sewer, they're talking about either hooking up to city sewer or putting in what's called a step system, and basically each property has a septic tank and a fancy filter system with the pump, and then they pump everything to the nearest main that they, you know, and use it that way. So the city then is doing the treatment at their lagoon. Their lagoon is, where'd it go? Somewhere here? Down? Where'd it go? I think right there maybe? Right in that area?
They're not looking at aerated.
What?
It's activated soil, just not.
Oh, it's not a lagoon? Okay. What was my point here? So, you know, whether they annex or they don't annex, as far as utilities go, it's a real mix. Now, Mark wanted Ethan here to talk about it some because he didn't think it was they could legally annex without providing services.
Yeah, thanks. So the question presented was what kind of carrot or stick can the Board of Health potentially have to get this to happen? And looking at Iowa Code 368, which is the annexation, city annexation, if it's an involuntary annexation, the city has a lot more flexibility in imposing the services. And it must be done with the City Development Board. It has to be done within 3 years, or they can sever the annexation. So there's actually some stuff there. But in a voluntary annexation, there's really nothing they can do under 368.7 other than what the city council can agree to with the developer. And I know with different services like Xenia Water, they're pretty territorial and they want to hang on to their customers and their territory. So it's a complicated thing, but it would bear out in the negotiations and the application between the developer and the city of Story City. At this point, I mean, the Board of Health wouldn't have any say in enforcing any kind of hookup or.
In looking at this, and I'm not certain, so this would be, we need to look, but when the Board of Supervisors was looking at their 5-year road plan, one of the projects that we agreed to put into that 5-year road plan was to contribute money to Story City paving. And I believe, I just don't know which segment of this. All right. So this is on rural right now, right?
Yeah, it's a gravel
road. It's a gravel road. I believe that we have said.
Yeah, right near that yellow line.
Yeah.
Is gravel. We looked at
that. What about the dotted down coming back?
Yeah, the dotted down.
The whole dotted line is gravel.
And I know the reason we agreed to do that was because there was a housing division of about 45 houses proposed. I do not know if it's the same division or not. I came here long prepared.
Right. Okay. But you definitely, that makes it more so you'd want to get the sewer in before you paved it.
You would think so. That would be the city, you know, the city's call. But I just to let you know that the county has agreed to kick some money into this. I don't believe we have an agreement yet, though. That would go through Ethan.
So. Yeah, not to my knowledge. I haven't seen one yet.
Right.
I can see where what's going to happen here is what they're going to. If you let them do septic tanks, then 2 years from now, these other people to the south are going to want to develop, and then they're going to run the sewer. Now all of a sudden, the sewer's right to the south property line of Al's, you know. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to say, "Oh, wait a minute, I wish we would have ran that sewer on into Al, and not have septic tanks."
And it brings to mind the Iron, which has been really kind of a tough subdivision.
Well, you got all this, what appears to be development to the west. I assume they're on septic systems right now.
Some of them are, that RV park
those,
you said.
I'm sorry, those dots are septic systems.
Well, it looks, is that a trailer park?
Yes, yeah. And they're
how about the circle drives?
What about right where your arrow is? Is that, what's that in there?
What is that?
Isn't there like a campground in there or something?
Oh, that's Bethany Manor.
Is Bethany right there? Where
it's not. It's owned by Bethany, but it goes by some other name. Timber
right, but it's
Ridge or something like
that. Yeah, they have city sewer, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
They come. It's like a private line that goes from. It picks up these houses here, and the main building comes to Manhole, like right here. It's a private.
So it goes across there.
Yeah.
And that was the one that I was thinking was 400 feet, but that's over the service line, so we couldn't dump into the service line.
But on the east line of that dotted, east of the dotted line, is that's developable around ground too, right? Where it says the interstate ramp, that those two parcels there that are to the.
I assume so. I mean, you know, I'm not a planner or a city person, so, or, you know. City planner, so I don't know, Mark, but I assume so. Why wouldn't I be? This here,
right here is that antique store, and then like this is the light that takes you to the Burger King and the factory outlet down here, and then north. And that dotted line I put there just as to show the distance between there and there. I just added that. That doesn't indicate the type of painting or anything like that.
I think it's paved right to the city limits, isn't it?
Say what?
It's paved right to the city limit.
Yeah, I think so. Right about there, yeah.
Is that paved clear up to there? That dotted line is paved now?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was gravel, all that.
It's definitely gravel up here.
Okay.
Yeah, I think
then that's what we've agreed to.
The city limit.
That yellow is gravel.
Oh, so it's paved right up to the yellow?
Yeah.
Yes, it's paved to here. It's thereabouts, anyway. Yeah, from sure. Here to County Line Road is gravel.
And so it doesn't sound like we have a lot of say in this.
No,
and the story, city, did they have any say at this point about what they're gonna do, or has anyone?
I guess it's still way up in the air. I tried to get a meeting together, and Scott Renault, who is the client's engineer, said no, too early to start meeting on this yet. So, if there's no proposals coming across my desk, I guess he's right. Yeah. It's too early.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but just, Mark wanted this on the agenda just to have everyone aware of it. And
I think that's a good idea. That it would be really nice if, I mean, I wouldn't put a lot of say into it, but or a lot of time into it. But it'd be nice if you could at least continue to ask for some type of meeting so you could give them your opinion and our opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to do this, but this is what our opinion is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd say my opinion would be if it's annexed, it ought to be on city sewers.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
And that would be our opinion of the Story County Board of Health.
I will, on behalf of the supervisors and the secondary roads, make inquiry or ask our staff to make inquiry from the road situation, because as Mark said, if they're going to do sewer, that would be the time to lay it.
That's right.
You know.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Okay. All right. Always good to have you at a meeting, Ethan.
Yeah.
All
right.
It's been a while since
Okay. Discussion and consideration of participation in HUD-led hazard control program.
Okay. So got an email late last week on this grant opportunity. Had Kathy review the grant opportunity, and I think we're all in agreement that we should not apply for this grant. It is a minimum of $1 million, and then 10% cost share, and training and all this. And honestly, I don't think we would qualify for the grant, because even at the state level, many years ago when we applied for that, we had to piggyback on to Boone County because we just didn't have the housing stock and the numbers of poisoned children to qualify for the grant, you know.
So we need more poisoned children.
Yes.
Okay. That's right. Okay, just as long as we need to know our goals here.
But so I was asked to run it past the Board of Health, and I would appreciate a vote on this, your recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. Did I mention that the application is due August 9th, which is 3 days, you know, so... I recommend a no on this, but it's ultimately your decision, obviously.
Plus kids from Detroit.
Plus kids from Detroit.
I would accept a motion to vote down the HD.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor? Any further discussion? All those in favor of a no vote for the grant, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay, you got it.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Septic system proposed ordinances.
Okay, so now this is, we tried talking about this a while ago, and
right.
We kind of got wrapped around an axle.
Yeah.
And so what I did this time is, you know, I wrote a draft, and Kathy and Matt and I went over it with a fine-tooth comb, and Mark did too. So what I would like to do today is to discuss the concepts, and in this handout here with the yellows, if we could just get a yes or a no on that direction from the Board of Health. If you totally disagree with some of these concepts, then please vote on that, and we'll nix it out of the proposed ordinance. And then and then after that, I think the next step then would be to get a work group with a task with the stakeholders and discuss that, and then come up with something 2 months from now for final. Now, I talked to Ethan, and he will advise us on some of these things, if we can go forward or not, and that'll be
real quick before Therese goes.
Yeah.
Will you get me that, if you email me that name?
Okay.
And then I'll be able to track it down, and I'll give you advice. But I have to look and see what the lab test is.
Okay.
Before I can give you advice.
All right.
Okay?
Thanks.
Thank you. Okay.
So I guess we'll just start at the top. I'm really thirsty. We'll start at the top of the list with setbacks. I strengthen. So I strengthen some of those, increase some of those setbacks to protect the waterways. And that table is on page 3. And those line up sort of, or at least take the influence from the from the NPDES requirement and the way they the DNR classifies wells or classifies waters of the state.
The setbacks I thought was very interesting. I read some of those. I read what you proposed. And to me, from what I could tell, that sounded very reasonable. How onerous is that is to have a much greater setback? Like, is it? Does it mean that someone has to have a bigger piece of property to have more of a setback? Or?
Depends on the soils and what kind of system you have to go with. Basically, I mean, this. Mm-hmm. A lot of these are pretty much the same. 10 foot from the edge of the road ditch. A lot of these haven't changed a lot, have they, Margaret?
No, it's mostly the ones that would have a stream cutting through their
right,
yard.
The ones that,
okay, yeah. That's the big one. Okay.
Oh, this page
okay.
Here.
Yeah, I saw it, yeah.
Just the new ones.
Those are the new ones. Okay,
the ones
got it.
We've okay. Upped a little bit.
Okay.
So, you know, it's a pretty conservative increase. I know a lot of people are just surprised how small a setback it is for streams from laterals. So I think it would be well accepted.
Okay.
Just a little extra protection for the water.
Okay. So
if I could just hear a voice on that. So you're okay with that then?
I'm okay
or
with that. Okay. Right.
Making them a little stronger?
Yeah.
Strong enough, are they?
Yeah. I think we're good.
Okay. Okay, so this next item was Mark's idea, individual systems required. And this stems from the irons, because what we're getting, what townhouses, shared septic system, including a shared tank. So what if this guy goes on vacation and this guy can't get into his house to turn off his running toilet or something like that, and the alarm is going off? So it's just
a
very practical.
In your house, you know, back up, things like that. Then who's responsible?
Yeah,
I think that's a good idea.
You've been on septic.
Whose responsibility if the thing fails? One person doesn't want to pay for it.
Yes, it's saving them from themselves in the long run. I think.
Sounds good to me.
So sounds good. Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay, so this next item we're going to skip, disclosure of septic when filing for different permits, for different county-type permits. Now, we ran this past the board back in 2015, I think it was, and you all liked it. But then Steve Holmes put the kibosh on it because he didn't think it was defendable the way I'm remembering it. But Jessica is out of town this week, so Friday she'll be back, and she'll review her notes and that from that, because she's not remembering it totally because it's been quite, you know, several years. So they're going to review that and see if we can revisit that, if it was just maybe one person's idea of a direction he didn't want to take, or...
What was this about? I don't recall. What can you...
Okay, so for example, if a guy comes in and wants to add a porch onto his house, we take a look at our files to see if there's a septic system there so he doesn't build over top of it. Sometimes there's no septic there at all. And we would like to be able to say, disclose what you have. We don't think you have a system.
But we would not have the ability to tell them to put in a system, would we?
Well, we would. As soon as we discover that there's no septic system, we can require that he do that.
This would make him, this would require him to do that.
Yeah, so we could, yeah. And it went over like a lead balloon when we tried it for a while. Got a lot of heat at the counter there. Yeah, it was no fun, I will say that, but it is a really excellent way to get the people with no septic systems, you know, up to snuff on that.
I think that's a good idea. I happen to know somebody that bought a house with the porch built over the system.
Okay, yeah.
And they had no idea.
Yeah.
That had been the case.
It's easy,
yeah,
to get to.
And in that case, you know, we review it. Back in the day, we didn't review them because planning didn't include us in that routing system. Now they definitely do. So we would catch that and, or hopefully catch that and not allow that to happen. So, and then this takes it a step further saying, oh, well, we looked, and you're fine as far as where your porch goes, but you don't have a system at all, or our records don't show anything, and it's time for you to put a new system in. And sometimes they just walk out, and they don't want to put the addition on or whatever because they're so angry. And I guess so the argument against this is that sometimes they might not bother with a planning and development or a zoning application. They'll just go ahead and do it because they don't want to deal with putting in a new septic system. And I mean, that's a good argument.
I think it's a good idea.
Okay. Yeah, you all liked it in 2015, or, well, three of you were on the board then, so.
It really makes sense. And the reality is for people who want to avoid these things, they just don't go for permits. They do it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, really, if they want to avoid it, they can.
But is that,
we do that in Ames.
Is that destroying Jerry Moore's program, though, by,
right,
you know, by discouraging people to get, you know, a zoning permit? Yeah.
I know.
So anyway,
yeah, I'd be in favor of that.
Be in favor of that, okay. And then we'll get guidelines from Ethan after he comes, after Jessica, and they're all on vacation on and off over there, so we'll get that figured out. Okay, so now, and then the next item we've all discussed, and I think we're all on the same page for this. Who can do a site evaluation and what the evaluation should include? EH reviews the evaluation, that kind of thing. So we all agreed that it's time to get an engineer to start doing these systems. Based on how hard it was yesterday, I'm all down for it. So continue with that thought?
Okay.
Okay, and then the ones that are in black or that are not highlighted, they're really just cleanup things, or, you know, it's not controversial at all. So I thought we really didn't need to discuss them, but if you want to, that's fine as well. So the next one is a certificate of installation. And this, again, is a time of transfer thing to kind of assure people that, yes, a system has been put in, you know.
It's just, it's a little extra work for our department, but I think it would be worth it, don't you? Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a go. Okay, so the next one is kind of tricky. We don't think that anyone in Iowa requires this yet, any of the counties. Minimum level of septic maintenance required. So it's modeled after the state of Minnesota. They require every 3 years pumping the tank. We're going to recommend every 5 years. What we don't know, or require, what we don't know is if this could be retroactive. Because if it goes on the system starting in 2020, January 1st, 2020, any new system that goes in every 5 years, they would have to prove that they pumped their tank, that would be great. That'll keep the new ones on track and good. But the bad ones, of course, are the ones that have been in the ground for a long time. Those are the ones that we would like to get, but I don't know. So that's an Ethan question, if we can be retroactive with that. And then the problems that Minnesota has run into, of course, is how do you track that? How do you enforce it? You know, the pumpers are also time of transfer inspectors. They all are in our county. So they can just report to us quarterly who all they pumped. And then it's not any real extra work for them, because they are required to keep records of who they pumped anyway for their DNR contract annual inspection. So, you know, they'll have to report it, but it won't be a ton of extra work
for them. Let's put this scenario out. I bought an acreage, and I applied it, and I put in a septic system. And I decide, you know what? We're only going to pump this thing once every 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know? No problems. Everything works out fine. And then 20 years down the road, I want to sell it. Mm-hmm. Then what happens? Because you, at the time of transfer, you say, oh, would I be fined? Would I?
Mm.
Would you come out in 6 years and say, how come you haven't pumped your system? Would you keep track of it? I'm thinking also, you know, my family lives in eastern Iowa in the country, and they have a septic system. No one's ever been out there to inspect it. No one's ever been out there. You know, they only pump it when there's an issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know? And so
that's a great question.
My family is the best role model for this. Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
So how would that work? Because if you're going to put the regulation in, you got to kind of think about these scenarios.
I can agree with that, because I was in the same situation, and I pumped it when I thought we might have a problem. I had a neighbor that pumped it every year. I asked the pumping guy, he said, don't touch it as long as it's working.
The answer is somewhere in between.
And if it's properly rated for the amount of people in your house, you think you wouldn't. I understand the issue of maintenance. I understand that.
Yeah. And maybe if they could prove. Let's see. So, you know, if they're reporting which tanks are being pumped, then we would know which ones are not, and they would all be new applications. Just about everybody has an email address or a mail address, so emailing would be cheap. Just hey, you know, 5 years, it's time to pump your tank, and our PIP program could spit out letters and reminders, and then we would just have to mail them or email them. Okay.
You're saying every septic tank in Story County would have to be pumped every 5 years.
New.
No.
Septic.
No.
Just new?
No.
Or
yeah.
Everyone?
Well, new. I mean, it would be great if everyone, but I think new. I think it's legally we could only go with new, and then we catch those other ones on
The old ones are probably more susceptible to be pumped than the new ones.
But we're talking about new regulations. It's hard to grandfather everybody.
So, yeah, and so you have to think about going forward. 20 years from now, that tank will have been maintained. Compared to 20 years ago, that block of tanks have not been maintained.
So I have a big house in the country. It's just Cindy and I. We put in a new septic system. make it kind of a good size because you want to make sure it doesn't go into the
and
stream.
And 5 years,
then
you...
And then 5 years, well, does it need to be pumped?
Probably not.
Probably not.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. But maybe you could...
Aerobic bacteria is working, right? You know,
although if you go to sell, it has to be pumped anyway to look at it for the inspection.
Transfer. Oh, time to right, right.
Yeah, so that kind of, so that's not a, yeah, so that would take care of itself that way. But it, like every 5 years, you might not need to.
Transfer in that older one.
Yeah, it's true.
So why, though, I mean, in looking at the every 5 years, you're looking at going forward to see that they get cleaned out. But I'm thinking the majority are the ones that we're concerned about are the old ones.
Mm-hmm.
And so are you, if I heard you correctly, you're going to talk to Ethan to find out if we can make it retroactive, mm-hmm. as in when you're saying retroactive, make all those get pumped right away, or are you just saying every septic tank from now forward needs a pump every 5 years? So we may be stuck with the old ones for 5 years.
Yes.
Before then they hit the law itself.
That's... Yes, that one would be my choice, but a lot more difficult to reach and enforce.
The old ones would have to be pumped too.
So everyone would have to be pumped. Yeah.
So they'd all have 5 years to get it done.
The old ones too?
Well, I don't know if Ethan will let us do that, but...
Well, I can't see why not going forward.
Forward for sure. Yeah. I don't see where that.
I thought you were talking about trying to get the old ones pumped in the next year or so.
Yeah.
Is it retroactive? That's what I heard of retroactive.
Yeah. Well, no. If we get to do the old ones, it would be starting. They would have 5 years from 2020 forward. So between 2020 and 2025, they would have to pump their tanks.
Got it. Okay.
And how is it being kept track of that this proceeds?
So it's $250.
What's it? It's about $250 to pump a tank now?
About that, yeah.
$250 to $300, depends on big. So you're forcing people to spend $300. Probably 5 years from now, it'll be $350 probably.
Mm-hmm.
If they keep raising prices. You're forcing them to pump their tank whether it needs to be
pumped or not.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, you could have a guy show up and measure it, and if it doesn't need to be pumped, he goes on. So it might cost $100 for his service call, but not $250 because he didn't pump it.
But I think, you know, like when I talk to people, I kind of reference it like your vehicle, your preventative maintenance. You get the oil changed 3,000 miles or whatever every 3 months. And like you said, Dr. Passion, with just two of you in the house every 5 years, is that too much? But you got to think, all the cleaning products that you're putting into that tank that sit there for years and years. That
I have a high fiber diet, too.
You know, it binds, it binds into that sludge, and it might be affecting those bugs that, you know, you're not getting. If you a heavy cleaner.
Right. Oh, I'm not really arguing
it's
probably
good
for the environment, mm-hmm. but are we going to get someone pushing back and saying you are increasing bureaucratic, you know, the bureaucratic hand and not going after the real problem, which are the old septic systems. But if we could get the old systems on the same one, that would be almost a logistical nightmare about how to do that.
Yeah. You know, on the new ones, could we make it 10 years?
A lot of them are going to get pumped on time of transfer.
Not everybody lives in the house. I kind of see the unenforceability of the rule. That Minnesota, you know, the University of Minnesota is like the go-to in the United States for septic systems. Their program
the
up
Middle
there.
East. Midwest.
And I like to think they do.
And if they're at 3 years, that's got to tell you
north, so they don't know.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just thinking we have a hard time getting the ones that don't work, let alone pumping the ones that do work.
They're the new ones.
But the new ones, you're kind of guaranteeing yourself that they're going to last longer and they're going to be working correctly.
In the future, so that, you know,
20 years down the road, it's going to be a lot better shape than one that was installed 10 years ago, what it's going to be in 10 years.
So the other scenario we have to look at is, let's just say you get your proverbial house in the in the acreage, and they do the time of transfer, and the septic system is okay, but it's kind of maybe getting old, and you think, well, I might want to put a new one in, make it larger. And then all of a sudden, I'm looking at the fact that I have to then get it pumped every 5 years, whether I want it or not.
The cost of the system would be the thing that trips you up more than the pumping,
especially
if you're selling.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, no one wants to just upsize when they're selling for the heck of it. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Time of transfer on septic is everybody, including family members or family members?
No, that list of exemptions still is there. So foreclosure, so the banks don't have to do it. Direct line of consanguinity do not have to do it. Those guys, yeah, they're off the hook.
Some of the ones that might be most in need again.
Exactly.
Foreclosure, one or whatever. Okay.
And that's one of the problems is you get these old farmhouses and they've never had a septic system. They get handed down and it just keeps going. It's never inspected, so they've never had a system. And that's one of the
And they think
issues.
They're working beautifully because they're hooked to the tile, so it just...
They flush the toilet and it goes somewhere.
Yeah. So the only time they get in trouble is when somebody severs the tile, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's backing up, or not severs, but blocks or cuts off. It's all of a sudden going into their basement. Never had a problem before.
Could we make this just a recommendation that they do it every 5 years rather than a have to?
That's what we do now. I mean, I honestly don't think it's that tough for the new ones going forward. It'll be written on the permit. I don't think that we would fine them or anything like that, but it's just another step toward educating and pushing them in the right direction. You know, there's a lot of rules that we work with people on. We don't, and you know, just clamp on them, you know, as far as enforcement goes. But the older ones, that would be the tricky ones, but those are the ones that we need. So the concept...
So you want to really have this to use in case someone's got a real bad well, a bad septic system. And then if they still don't fix it, then you might fine them.
But this isn't going to apply to old systems.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, that's what she's talking about, is seeing if Ethan says that we can make this so that from whatever date we start it, that every septic system, every 5 years from that date, has to be pumped every 5 years.
You know, when these tanks get pumped, a lot of times that's when they learn that it's shot, and then they go forward with putting a new system in. And so...
it backs up into their mess.
Yeah, so because like right now, they're just waiting until it backs up into their house. But once they get it pumped and they can see that the tank is shot, you know, then they kind of pretty much have to get their new system put in. It's a big, huge bill for a lot for people putting this in. But, you know, if we want to get tough on water quality, that's our piece of the pie that we're working on. We can't touch ag. We can't touch urban runoff, but we can impact septic. That's where it's at for us.
Check with Ethan and see if we can go back to all systems, and I think we do it all or none. I think you got to include everybody.
Oh, all or none. Okay, interesting.
Hey, I'd say all or none.
Okay.
The ones that are in trouble are the old ones.
And then that you'd see that when they open them up.
But the new ones aren't going to be old ones one of these days.
And you're going to have probably about 1,000 systems that are going to have to be replaced.
Yeah. I'll be retired, so
what? You know, it was 72 when they started permitting systems, you know, so we've got lots of systems out there that are 40 years old.
That are starting to turn.
So, Margaret, I think
the
green.
Yeah. The baffles are gone.
Oh, yeah.
And
green.
Have never been pumped.
The middle separator, there's no two compartments.
Yeah, a lot of those weren't even two compartments. So.
I know.
Okay, sampling requirements for discharging systems.
Okay.
Tell me a discharging system again.
Okay, so systems like sand filters, Advantex, Cocos, they are designed to discharge out a pipe. Okay. And sometimes, or most of them now, we require it to discharge to laterals, and that is then considered not an open discharge. So it's only those that are that you can walk over to the system and see a pipe discharging.
Like to a creek?
Like clean effluent to the ground or creek. Or
it's treated water.
It is treated water.
Okay,
yes, it's treated water.
Thank you.
Sorry. Treated water. And then the ones, and this is a DNR state law, the ones that are hooked to drainage tiles, they automatically have to have an MPDES. Okay. In Chapter 69, we are allowed, or we are required, loosely, we follow this, to inspect discharging systems annually. So to do a thorough inspection, you have to be able to sample it. This is really just reinforcing what's already on the books in Chapter 69.
But you want to do it every 5 years instead of every year? I thought you said yearly.
They are yearly. This is sampling yearly inspection.
Okay.
And
sampling
by Chapter 69, and this is sampling. So it just kind of recognizes or
Yeah, sounds reasonable.
Okay.
Well, to go along with that, though, it depends if they're having the systems serviced, you know, like the cocoa.
And I did put a little, if you do a cocoa
Turning that over and, you know, like they do the maintenance program on them.
Mm-hmm. Then that counts as their five-year thing, so they don't have to repeat that.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Okay. In the write-up, that's what it says. Yeah. Yep. Good catch.
Now, you mentioned here, you know, every 5 years. Well, who decides when that starts?
Yes. Well, that brings us, that's a good segue. That brings us to the effective date, the last item. And so that's kind of up to you. We were throwing around ideas. I'm hoping by January 1st, we could have this on the books. That might be a little unrealistic. And if not, then, so when the new draft is adopted, that's when it would go into effect.
And that's for all septic systems or just the new ones?
Well, it depends on what Ethan says.
Yeah, it depends
on what Ethan says. So some of them might be effective the day that this is adopted, and some, but it might apply only to new systems, where some of these might apply to all systems.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Does that answer that?
Makes sense.
Okay.
Okay. Sounds great.
Okay, so next we're going to get a work group together, have a meeting, and go forward with these ideas. Hopefully, next meeting we'll have another draft, but it'll be closer to what we want as a group.
Okay, very good.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, so now as we finish up, next is comments. Any comments from staff? Comments from staff? More comments? Comments? No comments from staff? Any comments from the ex officio?
I have a question.
Okay.
Tanning. You know, we had last meeting, we had talked about whether you guys wanted to go forward with a tanning ordinance locally, and I just wondered where you were with that.
Kind of looking at what's out there and how we can adapt it to maybe doing something at the county level, but we're not at a point where we're
going to
present it.
Okay, thank you. And then Lisa, sorry she couldn't be here today, but I don't know if you know it or not, but she'll be on a plane, not till 4 o'clock, to Paris.
Yeah, what I heard.
So that's why you got me instead.
That's right.
I have a staff comment. I talked to Kristen Obink today,
and
she said hi.
Yeah,
she's doing great. Yeah, she's hanging with her llamas. And
So this is your last meeting.
Well, I'm the alternate.
You're the alternate.
So in the event that...
She's going off to Paris.
Right, and the reason I do apologize for being late, I had just planned to sit in the back of the room. Okay,
so you're always up in the room.
Well, I appreciate that. But but otherwise, you know, I think she'll be here. I don't know if she's whisked her off somewhere else, but hopefully for a while she'll be here. Yeah.
All right. Well, it's fun to have you here.
Thanks.
Even if you are late.
Yes, I know.
But I should talk. I'm late most of the time.
We always make it. You make it by.
Yeah, I don't make it until the meeting gets started, because it doesn't get started until I get it. Anyway, so Mark, anything?
Nope,
okay, I have nothing to add except that these I just want to say, I've been sitting on this board for how many years now? 19 years, close to 20 years. This is, the conversations are getting so much more interesting.
Beach trip.
Yeah, I know. It's like, really, it's like, yes. Do you have any comments?
No.
John?
But I got you beat by many years.
Yeah. Yes, you beat me by many years.
We both have you beat.
Yeah, I know that. Okay. All right. Well, if no objections, meeting's adjourned. Thank you very much.